listening to Inclusive AF with Jackie Clayton and Katie Van Horn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Katie Van Horn.
And this is Jackie Clayton. I'm trying to get it right. It just feels weird. Yeah.
That sounded more like you're on The Price is Right. So, like, I feel good about it.
Yeah, I kind of felt good. It.
So this is the Inclusive AF podcast. And we are coming to you from the heat of the summertime. And we need to, Erica, we don't even know where you're from, but we'll ask you that here in a bit. We have a special guest with us today. Erica Hines is joining us. And so we are going to jump right in. So Erica, I would love for you to introduce yourself, share a little bit about, you know, who you are with our listeners.
Yeah, my name is Erica Hines, and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. So I join you from heat and humidity. A little bit about me. I run a firm called Every Level Leadership, and I like to say that I like to refer to myself as a DEI practitioner with a race equity sort of specialty.
Love it.
Awesome. Well, thank you for taking the time. First off, would love to hear just how you got into this work and kind of what inspired you to kind of get started on doing this leadership work.
Yeah. So on August 1st, it'll be 12 years that I've been doing this work. And so I remember distinctly that when I first started out, I had no intention of doing DEI work. I was going to do women's leadership, which is like gigantically broad. But I was like, that's what I'm about, women's leadership. And so my intro into doing specifically work around inclusion and equity and diversity and racial equity came from when you go out into the consultant world, I'll just be very transparent. Like, you take any job that you can get, right? Because you want to be able to feed yourself and have a roof over your head. And so I fell into the work 12 years ago and quickly found that it was more interesting than what I had originally set out to do. It was more fulfilling than what I set out to do. And at that time, that was like, we were just starting to talk about unconscious biases. And I was like, what is this? Let's explore that. So now I'm sort of like, oh, unconscious biases, like, that's okay, yeah, whatever, everybody knows, that's fine, move on, let's move on. That's what brought me to the work, and what really made it a vocation was I've always been oriented towards like social justice and social change, and I began to view doing this type of work as one of the ways in which I could help create social change. So
I love that. It's so important. I think, I don't know if I've actually met somebody who said, you know, I'm going to do diversity and equity work. I think it's, we should start asking everyone, how did they get into this space? But that's such a long time. I'm going to ask, what do you think keeps you doing it? I can understand now and listening to the social justice, but I have, it's not diversity fatigue. Sometimes it's diversity practitioner fatigue, where I'm like, yeah, I swear to God, like, not one more day. Mm-hmm. One more person asked me to do this, I am out.
Yeah. You know?
How do you can sustain doing it for that amount of time and still smile?
There's a couple of ways. So absolutely, like, co-sign. If there were five of me, five times, diversity practitioner fatigue. Also co-sign the idea that, you know, we can be operating, or, you know, sometimes I think about, like, I'm operating and like doing my little piece of the pie here, and the entire world has decided to explode. Therefore, my little piece of the pie means nothing because the entire world. So I didn't expect to sort of, I feel like I'm about to go deep. So this is
okay.
We're gonna do this. So I think one of the things that sustains me is like when big events that are happening that are unjust, I do go back to my roots of being committed to social change. And I literally go back to books that have sustained me in terms of my desire to have impact. So like one of the places, there's a book, one of the places that I like call Mecca is, although that might be like, you know, inappropriate. So what I call a divine place for me is the Highlander Center. And so they were early, like they were one of the places where civil rights was started. And so what sustains me is going back to like the early roots of folks and movements that I admire. And I'm like, all right, like none of this is new, right? Like the world has been unjust and we just get flare-ups of unjustness. And that progress takes time. And so I think what sustains me is to be like, all right, go watch Hulu, eat ice cream, yell at the world, rest for a couple of days, but then go back to where you know that you can have influence and do the work.
That's a lot better than my plan of like just drinking Corona and calling Katie at midnight.
I mean, no, that happens too. I mean, there's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, let me add.
It's a balance.
I should probably not have like said that I was like, that I'm sitting here in like this very like monk-like life. No, there's a lot of also like, I'm going to watch TikTok for 7 hours and then I'm going to watch Hulu and then I'm going to talk to my friend and we're going to talk about how everyone was horrible and we're going to devolve into whatever. No. It's everything. It's all of that in between. The point is that I go like, all right, I've had that.
Yes.
Do I want to continue? Okay.
Right.
I think that's such a critical piece because I think we all have, or, you know, hopefully folks have those spaces where you can have the silly conversations and watch TikTok and talk about, you know, what feud is going on between what mom on TikTok, because there's a lot going on with some moms on TikTok that I just recently saw. I was like, I don't know what's going on. There's always something, or, you know, Johnny Depp, Amber Heard trial that, you know, everyone on TikTok thought they could dissect and all of a sudden we're all lawyers and always fascinating to us. But I think there's also, it is that you have to have those spaces where you can just go completely somewhere away from what we do every day, all day. But yeah, the Corona helps too. That's also good. Corona beer, to be clear, not Corona.
Right. Yeah. I also think that there's like, when people ask me like, what do you read? I don't read. I mean, like, yeah, I have workbooks, right? And I have a lot of those workbooks. But in terms of like fiction, I don't read things that are about racialized trauma or like gender-based trauma. No, I literally read cozy mysteries.
Yep. I love that.
And that's perfect. Yeah. Mine is more a smut novel. I'm a smut novel girl.
Oh, there's that too. Yeah. You know, I just go over here and I'm like, you know, yes. I'll be like, whatever. The world is perfect. So, yeah, let's go solve the murder.
Everything's fine. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have a question though. What's the biggest change you've seen in the last 12 years? Like, are you seeing the same types of clients? Who was hiring you 12 years ago versus who is hiring you today?
Oh, I thought you were going to say societally. No, I was like, wait, I have an answer. No. So who is hiring me today? When I first started out, I was doing a lot of work with government agencies, and it was really around like, how can we be more diverse and how can we be more inclusive? And it really was like, all right, this is like the folks who were hiring me really wanted to like understand the 101 level of how this works. And now the folks who hire me, so I'm going to be cheeky. They think they understand the 101 level, and I have to go like, do you? Like, we're going back to the beginning. And I often like, you know, sort of start it by saying, for some of you, this is review. I'm going to just think that you know it, but we're all going to get on the same page. But I mean, I think honestly, for anyone who does the work that we did, 2020 blew everything up. And I went from being like comfortably busy to overwhelmingly busy to back to comfortably busy, but also wanting to like move my business in a different direction. And so I don't know about you all, but like I'd say to clients, I was like, look, everyone decided that they suddenly wanted to be anti-racist as of June 2020. And I also want to be clear to you that if you think that you're going to be anti-racist in 24 months, you're wrong. So now that we've gotten that established, let's move on.
Right. I think if you look, I don't know if you saw it. So I work at Textio. I report to Karen Snyder, and we were having these conversations, and she posted on LinkedIn this past week. Like, there's so many people that are passionate about this that refuse to recognize, like, you really need a practitioner to do this work. Yeah. And there's a lot of, you're right, there's a lot of pop, like, in 2020. And unfortunately, there are a lot of, like, hacks, like that came out of 2020 that gave some Agreed. Really bad advice right. that we're seeing into the place. And you're like, no. But I think that you're right. We're also seeing... we're seeing some significant changes. Like, there are things that I can think as a practitioner, especially going where I'm dedicated to one client, when my boss says, this is what we're doing for the executive team, and this is not an optional, this is not a nice to, this is what's expected at a minimum commitment, this is what we, you know, it's almost like happy tears, because, you know, if people are doing it right, they need to get to those spaces. Some people are still having that one anti-bias class.
That's what I was also going to say. I'm like, I agree with you wholeheartedly that June 2020, it was like, we all need to do this immediately, and we're going to fix it in 25 minutes or less. And you're like, no, sorry.
And could you just record it for us? Because like, I kind of want to be able to do it on our time, and we won't engage. We don't need to engage about it.
Erica.
Right.
Can you just send me a one pager?
Uh-huh. Yes. No. Yeah. You're going to send us all over the edge right now. But I do think there's also, to Jackie's point, like there is this, you have folks that are still at that 101 level. And then you have other folks that are trying to move the needle. But I agree with both of you that it is, you have to have that expert that can come in and actually help you with what do you need to do to actually make this real and make a change happen, not just have that 2-hour anti-bias training or whatever it might be. Like, how do you dig into the systems and the tools and the processes?
Yeah.
Because I think that's the piece that folks did. I truly believe, I don't know what your thoughts are, but so many people did reach out, and it was like, oh, we're just going to do this training and then it's going to be fine. And you're like, no, it won't.
Someone asked me to do a 30-minute lunch and learn on anti-bias. And I was like, my ego, I tripped me up. So like, you know.
Yeah. Were you like, are you joking? Like, are you joking?
Yes. I was like, wow. Wow.
So if you could go ahead and knock out racism in 30 minutes or less, that'd be great. Oh. Thanks, Jackie.
I'm like, in 30 minutes, it's like, hi, my name is Jackie. This is bias. This is unconscious bias. Okay, bye. Like, I don't even know. Like, yeah. Like, any questions?
Well, I don't know about you all. I find myself doing a lot of, like, at the beginning, like even before I have the client, you know, we're like, we're in conversation, or we're just at the beginning of our engagement with each other. I find myself saying things to them like, oh, just so you know, I don't actually have all the answers. Like, this is this is going to be an iterative process. Like, we're going to try some things. Some things aren't going to work. We're going to come back. Like, you hired me because I have a lot of tools. And also so that I can like hold this process for you. Right. I'm going to hold it because, but let me be clear. I also want to give it back to you. Like, I'm not trying to hold this forever. I don't want to work with you forever. Like, I want to work with you enough and I want to send you on your way. But I find myself sort of like kind of really trying to promote to them what might be difficult about this in the beginning. Like, I will say to them, at some point you'll resist me. At some point you'll like resist the fact that like what I'm suggesting to you, like you're not going to like it or somebody's not going to like it. And I was like, I just want us to be clear that that's going to happen. Cause when I name it, that's right. I don't suddenly want you to be like met out of the blue where it's like, no, we're committed to this idea. Right. But no one's resisting. And I'm like, remember how I told you this would come up?
I want to get a bell, Erica, where I could just be like, here it is.
Like, well, I think it's also like, if you think about change management, which is a lot of the work that this is.
That's right.
Yeah,
and exactly. And I think we all know that in change management, there's that resistance phase and the denial phase and all the phases that you see happen. But then there's also on top of that, when you're talking about this type of work, there's a personal,
oh gosh,
like you're personally attacking your, there's a personal piece to it. And that's why when I'm talking to folks, you know, I do talk about also that you're on a personal journey and on a company journey and everyone's on their own,
that's right,
at their own place, that's in right, the journey and at different phases of the journey. And each person is going to have those reactions at different moments. And sometimes it's going to be when you're least expecting it. And even myself, as I do this work, there are times when someone will say something in a room and I'm like, ooh, okay, that was a little bit of a gut punch. And I need to now take that in, feel some sort of way, but also not react, and process this and come back with what's the right answer. Not what does that defense mechanism want me to say? Mm. Not all white people, you know, not all white women, you know, no.
I love what Erica says on her website. I don't know if you got a chance to see this part, but she's like, you have to, for change, you have to be humble and ready to fumble. I am going to ask to borrow that, because that, I was like, yes, that's it. I mean, and I have to recognize that, you know, now with Beyonce's Break My Soul song, I'll be like, I'll be right back, and I can just turn it up, and then I'll come back. But I love the humble, ready to fumble concept. And I'd love to know, like, tell me more, like, okay, so then you get to the point where we know we all get, where people, like, now they're, you know, you're peeling back the onion and they got to the core, or now they recognize why this happened, how this happened when you're doing these long, you know, like, I'm mad at you or I'm frustrated because this hurts or this is not fun work. Mm-hmm. Besides just like bringing it back up to the attention, what have you done? Or do you have a situation that you can share that you think that you ended up giving yourself a pat on the back at the end of the day?
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcast, and now available on YouTube.
So, if I'm understanding you, it's like when people show their resistance, like, how do I handle that resistance?
Yes.
Okay. This is when I'm going to refer to the fact that I have been pretty much spent 20 years in therapy. And yeah. In therapy, what they teach you, I'm going to be one of those people. In therapy, what they teach you is that it is not your responsibility to take on other people's baggage.
Yes.
And so, and that's not me trying to be like a smartass. It's literally like, that is what I do. I will be like, okay, so I understand that you're upset. I understand that you don't like this. I understand that you don't like me. And they'll be like, no, I like you. I love you. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, either way, if I feel like I've gone as far as I can go in terms of like holding that individual like luggage, right? The baggage that they're like, I'm going to put everything out there and I'm going to let you know. And I want you to pick up my baggage and literally carry me through this because I am at a crossroads. I go, so I'm going to ask you what you need to do so that you pick up your own baggage and you take it back. Like, I feel like we've discussed this as much as we can discuss it in like this big, you know, group. And, you know, when you have to have that one-on-one time, and I'm like, I hear you, I understand you. And I'm going to give you a few questions to reflect on. That's
why are you like that?
And why are you like that? Who hurt you?
It's really more like, sorry. Stop doing that. Stop it.
Stop it. How'd you get here?
You're making me think of a book. It's an Oprah book because, you know, we love her.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to forget the name of it, but of course it's not going to come.
Oh, go ahead.
It's not what happened to you. It's, yes, what happened to you? And it's a great book by Oprah and Bruce Perry, mm-hmm. one of the doctors that's always on her or was on her show. And it basically is just those things, like, how do you start to, I'm going to use the word that everyone hates, unpack the actual things that have happened to you that mm-hmm. make you react or behave in certain ways. And not the, let me blame my parents for everything or let me blame my childhood for everything, but just the, oh, okay, now I understand that I react this way because of that. But to your point, you have to own that. It's not anyone else's to own. It's yours.
Yeah. And I also think that there's a certain amount of like, I don't know, I try to share times when I was like closed-minded and said things that a place where I feel like, well, not feel, I know I had to do work was in terms of learning more about the trans community. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about early like mistakes that I made 10 years ago that weren't appropriate, that like did a disservice, hurt people's feelings, I caused harm. And so mm-hmm. I talk about my reaction to when somebody said like, you caused harm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do think that there's also this element of like when a person is like replicating that, I also tell them like, I get where you are. And I'm also telling you like, this is what I did, not because I'm perfect, but to let you know you're human. Mm-hmm. But in your humanness, that does not mean that you get to leave me with the crap that you feel about your humanness. All I'm trying to say mm-hmm. to you is like, I get it.
That's right.
I've been there. I've done it. I was on my feelings. I was like, I am not that person. I have fallen out on the floor and I'm on the other side.
And you're going to have mm-hmm. to take your whole human self right back out that door.
Right. Exactly.
Like we'll see you. We will see you later. I think that is a great point. And, you know, I've always said, you know, like usually when those things come up, like that's your sign and you need to sit in it for a minute. Whatever is coming up is exactly. like, because I, you know, not only am I here to help, I'm getting paid to be here. This is exactly what you wanted. That's how this works. And then you have to explain that to organizations. I don't know if this has been your experience, but you have to explain getting to the place of diversity and inclusion is a painful, disruptive process. Nobody's going to make s'mores and sing kumbaya. It's not fun. There's conflict. And so what part of this is an exercise is learning how to manage and deal with conflict in a way without resorting to hurting someone. There's a difference in having, that's why they were having these tough, people have to learn to have real tough conversations.
Or throwing a temper tantrum.
Right. So, yes.
So they're like, I may not have hurt you, Katie, but I'm a fall out in front of everybody.
Right. That's right.
As an adult. And then when I'm asked to take a time out because that's what I need, I'm a fall out some more and try and get like four other people to fall out with me. And I'm like, no. You go fall out over there. We gonna take 10 minutes. Let's all have whatever feelings. I'm gonna have my feelings too, but you know what? I'm actually having during those 10 minutes, not right now.
Yeah, right.
You go collect yourself and I'm gonna check on you. I'm gonna even, and by the way, when I mean check on you, I'm gonna be like, do you want to discuss something? Because we're gonna go back in here and I'm gonna continue to run this training.
Right.
Yep.
So I just want you to know that this train is moving forward and you can either sit there and have your lip out, fine, or you can be a part of the training. Both are fine, but we're still moving forward.
That's right. I love that.
And I think that's also hard for people to like even, I think the reactionary temper tantrum, the, oh, you're, you know, saying bad things about me, you're making me feel badly. And you're like, no, I'm not. I'm holding you accountable. I'm letting you know what isn't okay anymore. And you know, Jackie asked earlier about like what has evolved over the last 12 years or what's changed for you. And like trans language, that's a perfect like example of what we knew 12 years ago or thought was okay versus today. I'm, you know, the trans community, I can, you know, I think there's a lot of different things that it's, no, you can't say that, feel that way, think that way. Like, this is what I need. This is where I need you to be now. And I think that's the part that's also hard is that it's that continual, you know, you said, did I have a closed mindset? You know, was I closed off to the idea of something and having to shift that? And we are having to be so adaptable and so open to change and open to what else, how else can we learn? What else can we learn about this topic? And I think that's hard. Like that is very hard to always be like, hey, I could be wrong about this. Hey, I could learn something new about this. Because we do want to be right. We do want to know. And to be like, actually, just maybe not so much. You don't know. Like, give it a minute. So I think that's part of it too. But I do appreciate that it is the go take a timeout. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I'd rather you go take a time out and sit in your feelings for that 10 minutes and come back and be productive versus disrupting the entire situation. Because to your point, we're all moving forward. Come on when you're ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I did want to say, it might be a shameless plug. There is merch with Be Humble and Ready to Fumble on it on my website.
Oh, okay.
I have a shop
with stuff on it. So there's a Be Humble, Ready to Fumble. There's also Thriving, Not Surviving, which has to do with my new initiative about Black women thriving.
When I get there, I'll buy that shirt. Okay. I don't want to misrepresent.
There's a lot of stuff there, but you can definitely have the mug that says Be Humble and Ready to Fumble. It can be all yours.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Excited. So I know what Jackie's getting. I know what Jackie's getting for Christmas now. So that's perfect. I love it. So what are you learning about now? What are you working on right now with clients that maybe has been different than in the past? You know, you just mentioned a new initiative that you're working on, but what are some of the things that you're excited about or that you're working on that are cool and new or not new and cool, but just the work?
So, I mean, I'll talk about the client piece. And then, I mean, if you don't mind, I'd love to talk about the new research around Black women in the workplace, which I hope to be working with clients with, but the research just came out a month ago, so we're still in like, look, it's here. But I think the thing that I'm most excited to work with clients on, I like my colleagues will tell you, like, if I never teach another unconscious bias training, I will die happily. Like, but also, so I like to say to them, they're like, we know you don't like 101 stuff. I'm like, no, like, we got to get into, you know, how is this showing up in your hiring practices? How is this showing up in, like, your values? So I really like getting into the whole, like, what is your plan? Like, we can have strategies all day, but, like, I want to help you figure out what your plan is, so that, like, this is like, so that we begin to, like, embed this into how your company runs. Right. Mm. And so, when we start getting to those conversations where they're like, oh, okay, we get that. We've seen that. Like, we're changing our, like, our retention metric, so that it, you know, that we require, like, evidence, so that managers aren't like, you know what, I like Jackie, so therefore Jackie's, you know, the things we all see. Like, I like doing that stuff and getting into the, like, what are we going to fundamentally change now and put in place so that this stays put, mm-hmm. beyond your knowledge, you know, beyond the, like, knowledge building. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting to do that more and more. And I think it's partially because I say to my clients, like, look, go. I actually have done videos on some of those 101 topics. I'm like, go watch those. We'll debrief. It's all good. But I'm like, I want to spend my time here. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it's backfired. I thought that they were further along than they were. And mm-hmm. We had to go back to the 101. And I was like, why are we here? Again.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
but isn't it cool? This is the part that I will say, you know, when you're talking about, you know, kind of the promotion process and being able to, like, have those conversations and say, okay, and you don't maybe have to call them out, because usually one of their peers will, or they'll say something and then they'll go, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. Or, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, I am using language that maybe isn't great for whatever. And once that light bulb goes off, and, you know, I think I've shared the story a few times. When I was at my prior company, we had been doing a ton of work on bias and promotions and review process and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I actually had, like, a group of engineers, mostly white males, sitting in a room, and we were doing a calibration session on all of the engineers in the whole company, you know, their subordinates, and someone said something, and you literally saw every head, like, look up and, like, look at the person, like, did you just say that out loud? Like, you're not supposed to say that anymore. That's yes. not okay. That's not how we're talking yes. about this anymore. And that's the coolest part too, is when they start to, like, get it themselves, and you don't have to be the one to correct or to, mm-hmm. You know, help them with the language, all that good stuff. So or that when, part's fun. I agree with you.
Yeah. Or when, like, you just make a suggestion and they run with it and they're like, hey, I just want you to look at this, like, give me feedback. And I'm like, what? Oh, where did you even get that from? Like, not yes. in a bad way, but I was like, this is yes. amazing. I'd never thought of that rubric. Thank you. May I use this?
Absolutely.
And it usually is absolutely
true. You know, we just launched a training class, and someone was like, oh, did Jackie do this? I was like, no, Jackie did not. Turns out, mm-hmm. There's more people that can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's lovely. And it's, I think what's difficult in my, and tell me if you've had this experience, is that it is fragile. After you get to that space, it is fragile. And it is, I think, interesting to see one new person in an organization that maybe was not vetted mm-hmm. properly, or where an exception was made, can just, like, set your organization fully backwards, right? Like, mm-hmm. I try to explain, right. You don't know unconscious bias till it hits you in the face. And when it does, it's too late. There's not a amount of training. You can't control your mouth. You're going to fall out on the floor. So you think you're ready. You don't know if you're ready.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And it's just so interesting.
It is. It's interesting. And also, I feel, I don't know. This is where I have started to say, I don't say this to clients, but here I'm going to say it on the podcast.
It's just us three. No one's listening.
No one's going to listen. What I say amongst my peers is at some point in like a relationship with the client, I have to say to myself, I can't care more than you about your place becoming diverse and inclusive and equitable. Like I cannot invest more energy.
That's right.
Than you are willing to invest. So if you decide that this thing that which could be like transforming your organization that you're like, nope, then I'm not like, it's not my job to like continue to push that transformation on you. What is my job is to like close out the deliverables, you know, get you to where I think that you can get in a way that I like, not that I assume like a matriarchal role. It's more like, if I can assess that you're only going to get here and you've decided you don't want to do anymore, I feel like my responsibility is to get you there, get you set up and let you be.
Amen. And I think we've all been in that situation where you've had a client where you're like, I don't know how else to say this, explain it, walk through it, justify it, whatever the word is, to get you on board. And that it can be hiring, it can be any of the pieces of the puzzle around people.
Yeah.
And I think we've all, whether it's a department within a company or a group or whatever it might be, where you do have that pushback, and it is like, okay, I'm at the end of the day, I get to walk away and I wish you well.
Yeah.
And it hurts my heart that you're not going to do more because it will make such a huge positive impact on your organization.
And I'm deeply frustrated.
And it's fresh. And I want to shake you just a scotch, but I am going to walk away. And that's the part. But every one of those, I also have, you know, that person that then reaches out from that team that says, can you just push a little bit harder? Cause they're almost there. Or can you say it this way or whatever? And I've had so many of those happen too, where like,
tell me what that's like. Cause I don't think I have a lot of those.
Well, like you'll have someone on the team that will be like, if they just could hear you say it this way or what, and it is one of those things, or hear it from someone else. Jackie knows this because she's actually been one of the people. I'll bring other people into the conversation. If you can't hear me say it, maybe you can hear Jackie say it, or maybe you can hear whoever say it in a different way than what I'm going to put it. And that will actually help with the impact. Because I think there's just those groups. But yeah, at the end of the day, I'm walking away hoping that you implement this and hoping that you actually make these changes, because it will be... We talk about the small tweaks that you can make in organizations and the little things that you can do that will make such a huge impact. And you're like, if you would just do these little tiny things.
Right.
You won't break my soul. You won't break my soul. You won't break my soul.
So I'm
not much of a singer.
So when Beyonce came out with that song, I was like, that should be the tagline for Black Women Thriving, because
this piece
around, you know, so the research project that we did was around looking at what did thriving in the workplace look like for Black women, and asking Black women, what are the conditions that you think need to be in place at work for you to thrive? And before we even got to those two questions, we asked Black women, what do you think it means to thrive? Like, what does thriving mean to you? Like, the question that we asked our focus groups was, tell me what you think thriving means. And like, this hurt my heart because when we did these focus groups, not once, not twice, but over 15 times, 20 times, we heard, I don't know. No one's ever asked. No one's ever asked me what thriving means to me. And then they followed without us asking this question. They said, but I know I don't have it.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.
So I didn't ask, like, do you think you have, they were like, I can't visualize and tell you what it means, but I know I don't have it at work. And so, of course, that was super depressing. And then we were like, okay, but we also have research about what thriving, like, there's been research out there, like, what does thriving look like in the workplace? And so what we did in this research is we said, all right, if we look at these premises of what thriving looks like, I want to ask Black women, like, do you think you have this? And like, what is inhibiting you as a Black woman from thriving? Because a lot of times people are like overall, the research around thriving is like, oh, it's about burnout. You know, what stops people from thriving is like not having autonomy. And what we heard from Black women is also that there is the fact that you're a Black woman in the workplace, and what is the impact of systemic historical inequities that find themselves deeply woven into how organizations run that keep Black women from thriving from every place, from like their paychecks to also like their well-being. I mean, stop me at any time. So like,
no, I'm very emotional about it, just because like I am blessed to be in the position that I am. And I think for me in this stage right now, I'm privileged to be able to say that the trauma comes when something positive happens. I'm starting to work on putting a curriculum. I don't know. Maybe we'll work on it together. Because people don't recognize when you have an inclusive environment, how that rattles marginalized people. Like, I don't even know what the fuck is happening, right? You're like,
yeah.
Why is everyone listening to me? Why isn't anybody arguing with me? Like, it's a real thing.
Yep.
And they're like, I'm just treating you like everybody else. It's like, what? Like, you just want to give people your wallet. Like, you just don't know what's happening. This isn't real. And I got emotional because my boss was like, last month, a couple months ago, was like, I know you've been really going through a lot. You should take the week off.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, this is the second, I'm damn near 50. I've taken 2 week-long vacations in my life, and both of them, one was this past Christmas, and the other one was this past week. Ever in my life.
Well, so we're going to talk about thriving in one's personal life in a separate conversation, because I'm like, rest and restorative practice. but I totally understand. And And so in doing this research is obviously very close to my heart for a few reasons. One, I'm a Black woman. Because sometimes people are like, why Black women? Why not like all women of color? And I was like, I am a Black person. Therefore, I wanted to study Black women. That right. should be obvious to you. It should not be this question over here.
It's the hand gestures for me.
Right. Like, do you see me? But then the second reason is that, like, sort of tying this into like just being a DEI practitioner. I have sat through I've given so many trainings where I have literally watched Black women never talk.
Yes.
I have done trainings where Black women come up to me privately and say, thank you for saying that.
Yes.
I have had Black women come up to me and say, I agree with you, but I'm not going to open my mouth because ...
Yes.
And I was like, what are we doing this for? Going back to the beginning, like, if you feel like after this training, you still can't open your mouth, I'm not actually going to look at you, Black woman, and go like, that's your fault. I'm like, this, and you know, I do come from like a nonprofit and philanthropic background, but I'm going to say like across the board, organizational systems are broken. Mm-hmm. So I was like, we did this research, and I very much said at no point in this research when we write recommendations will we ask Black women to do anything. The recommendations are written to organizations.
Yes.
They are written to managers and leaders. There is never there, and in this research, like, that felt very important for me to like hold that line in a very strong way, because it kind of is like an undercurrent of when, even if I'm like, as I'm talking to you all, I was like, the thing I'm not going to do, that we're not going to do, that I, and why I feel like this is exciting to me, is that I was like, we will never say you have to navigate this space that wasn't built for you. I'm tired of it. I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not saying it. I'm not giving you navigation skills, which is very interesting, because outside of our DEI practitioner circle here, everybody's like, what advice would you give Black women? And I've had to say like, none. I'm not giving Black women. And then they're like, wait, what? I was like, here's my advice. Do this work if you want to. Take care of yourself. Deeply rest. Let people who have called themselves allies decide that they're going to stand in solidarity. I'm like, I am not telling Black women to do anything. But I hope that this work is meant to center them and to say to organizations, now it's your turn. So I'll stop. Let me know if you have questions. What questions do you have? Thoughts, responses, whatever.
What my response is that we need a part two. My first response
is I'm taking a fucking nap, Katie. Yeah. I'm napping.
All right.
I was like, we haven't even talked about any of the results yet.
No, but... I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. Yeah. Like, I know we have to hear all the things.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. So
we should ask people for samples. Like, you know, it's our first time meeting, but hanging out. Maybe we need a sample so that we know that we need more time.
Yeah. So I want to respond to what you're saying, because I think the message, like, I cannot tell you how many trainings that just literally make my skin crawl of, we need to teach women how to physically take up more space, or how to be in a room, or how to speak, or how to, blah, blah, blah. And I think it goes
basically
back.
Basically what you want is for men to become, you want women to act
to
more like men.
Right. And not just men, a very particular narrow view of what a man is in their mind. But if they do that, they're also bitches. So let's be clear. Mm-hmm. So they actually can't do that. So like, it's so refreshing to hear this, And it's something that I hope everyone who's listening really hears that message, if nothing else, of your ERGs, all of your DEI work. And, you know, I think this is not the work of people of color or of whatever marginalized group you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. This is everyone's work. Mm-hmm. And Jackie needs a nap.
I need a nap. It just makes me laugh because it actually is my job.
No,
but I don't have to do it in other spaces, right? Like,
right.
I think that is what's so important to say. And listen, true story. I'm the VP of TA and DEI. So I'm talking, and the woman said, literally yesterday, I had to sit. That's why Beyonce is still fresh on the mind, because I talked to the candidate, and she said, I was like, what's your experience in inclusive spaces or places striving to be inclusive, or have you had your own personal journey? Because I'm curious. No, I wouldn't know those things. I would have to do research. And I was like, where would you start? And then they said where they would start. And then they said, do you have anything for me? I go, I have nothing for you.
What went through my mind was to throw this headset off.
Right? And I was just like, And if you followed me, people who followed me through the years know that I'm in a different space. I'm also, you know, close to 50. And I also am, you know, had life experiences. And they say, oh, you don't care anymore. No, I care very much. And just like everyone else, we can't get there if we can't have real talk. And I'm just glad. I really want to know the research. I had a client this past week tell me, or a guy wanted to show me his inclusion software, which I usually don't say. And he goes, what do you... Now, keep in mind, I'm the only person there. There's two people from representatives. And I said, so what did your study say about the difference between Black women or men and women? He goes, they want the same things. I was like, no, they don't. And I was like, what about Black women? He's like, Black women and white women want the same things. I go, now I know you're a lie. And now I know you're a lie. Because white women want Black women to get out of the way. So we can't, those two things, that's impossible. That's not true. Mm-hmm. And he goes, actually, I haven't done the research. I was like, you know what? Listen.
You're like,
you want to break my soul. You want to break my soul. Listen.
See, and I would have been like, well, no shit, Sherlock, because I literally, right. Like, that was a trick question. That was a trick question.
Yeah, you weren't supposed
and
to.
And you failed.
That you said, same.
Yeah, we're done.
We don't even want to wear the same kind of socks. We can't agree.
Listen, hold on a second. Hold on.
Jackie's
hold
like,
on.
Let's continue. It's 7:00.
Okay, no, I know. I like. I need to push pause. So, we're going to pause here.
Yeah.
But Erica, I want you back for part two, and we'll get it. We'll after we stop recording, we'll figure this out, because we need to get part two going, because I want to hear all of the results of the research. What is one thing, though, from this conversation you want folks to take away?
Gosh. Okay. I think one thing that I want folks to take away, and I think, Katie, it was something that you said, that I'm like deeply, deeply, deeply believe, which is this piece of, like, we are not going to achieve inclusion and equity if we don't do the self-work that we have to do and like maintain, like, I mean, the reason I say practitioner and I say this is because it's a practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not walking around Erica Hines inclusive individual. Erica Hines likes her little group of people. Like, I have to work at this. I'm not trying to entertain somebody who's different than me. But I have to work. So I'm like, what I want you to realize is like, it takes you continuing to work on yourself and being a part of like the group and the collective that's trying to make the change. Gosh, and now can I say another one?
Yeah. Absolutely. See, this is what I told you, this is what happens. There's never just one. Jackie and I are so bad at this game, but we do it every time because it's fun.
And stop thinking that DEI is like, I say this all the time. I am not Harry Potter. I am not walking into here. I say this like at the beginning. I am not Harry Potter. I am not here. If I could actually tap my wand and make your place inclusive and equitable, first of all, I would not be working with you because I would be a billionaire. Because I could just do this, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, so stop thinking that if you just do this thing, it'll suddenly happen. I'm like, it's a whole bunch of things. It takes like behavior and skills and software. And I'm like, I need you to realize the enormity of this. And yes, be like overwhelmed by it, but also just realize that's what it takes and just get to work.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you. Jackie, what you got?
I'm taking a nap and people really need to, you know, hug a DEI practitioner. I don't think people recognize the work that we do. And I want to give Erica a big like hug and have that support. And I know that it stands out to me to know that you haven't had a lot of conversations with a lot of other DEI practitioners. And that hurts my heart because this is hard. I don't know if I could do it without cussing people out with Katie. I don't know what I would do. So I think like, I want people to know that this is really hard work. It is a practice and it's something that that it takes an area of expertise and one book, one training, and one person is just not gonna get it done.
It's funny that you just said that, Jackie, because as we were talking, I literally sent a text message to one of our friends, Viva Asmalash, and I'm like, you have to listen to this episode we're recording right now because she is a DEI practitioner. And I am like, I know it's hard right now. It's just hard. Not even just right now. I know it's hard.
No, yeah.
And so, yes, spot on. And so everyone needs to go hug a DEI practitioner today. For me, I think it's the stop asking Black women to do this work. Mm-hmm. Like it has
Period.
To be. Yeah, it has to be.
Period.
Everyone else needs to change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also the part that will be the hardest thing for people to wrap their brains around. But it's not an excuse.
Yep.
Stop asking Black women to do
this.
Why I
don't do ERGs. It's why I mean, that's a whole nother thing. We need to stop talking.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, wait, I need to also add these three
what?
Points.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We'll be back, folks. Don't you worry. This is Katie Van Horn.
And this is Jackie Clayton. Bye.
Bye.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.